Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. We are glad to have you with us this fine morning.
Yep. Thanks for joining us. We are happy to be here with you. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be with us. We appreciate it.
So before we go into our guest for the day, I just wanted to just give you a little bit of information. First of all, you can call in to our show. I'm not sure if you're all aware of that, but you can call in. And the number to call us is area code 347-989-0126. And you can call and ask the guest questions or us questions or whatever you like to do. There's also a chat room. If you're on the Blog Talk page listening to the show, underneath the scrolling box of photos, there's a chat room that you can go into, and our producer can tell us if there's anybody in there. And the last thing I wanted to mention, I don't know how many people know about this because we forget to mention it, but Left of Straight Radio does have its own app, and you can get that at Google Play, the Google Play Store. Or the Apple Store, and you just want to look up Left of Straight, and the straight is spelled STR and the number 8.
Yep.
So that's just a little housekeeping I wanted to get out of the way, remind everybody. So with that said, today we're covering a topic that we haven't covered before, and we happen to have an expert on the issue to chat with. Derek Canis is an outspoken HIV and AIDS advocate, as well as a DJ, which we think is pretty cool.
Yep.
Get ready to have your eyes open to a topic that isn't on our radar like it should be. Please welcome to the show, Derek Canis.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Derek. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. You know, it's like Beck said, you know, it's a topic that we've never talked about on the show and certainly doesn't get the coverage that it should and that it deserves. You know, I remember being, you know, growing up in the 80s and it was talked about left and right.
A lot, yeah.
A lot. And, you know, since then there's been a lot of strides made in medication and whatnot. And it seems like people just don't think of it the way they used to. And, you know, it needs to be talked about. And, you know, still awareness needs to be raised and the stigma needs to be squashed.
Yeah, exactly. So before we go into our questions, do you have any questions for us?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Sounds like there's a little bit of a delay between us and him, so we won't, we'll keep that in mind so we don't talk over each other. But my first question for you, Derek, is you were exposed to HIV at an early age. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yes, I was 3 months old, and my family found out I had a congenital heart problem known as transposition of the great arteries, and I needed to have surgery immediately, so I was taken to go into surgery, and right before, there was a very big discussion of family wanting to donate blood. And they were told there wasn't enough time, there's plenty of blood in the blood bank, it's all safe, don't worry about it, we'll take care of them. So I went on in through the surgery, and I needed to have blood transfusions during surgery and during the 3 months post-op. And that 16 years later, I was diagnosed with AIDS after many, many health issues that were all related back to the virus.
Wow.
That's so tragic.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, you know, we're sorry to hear that you had to go through that. And that must have been a difficult upbringing, you know, with having, you know, you mentioned you were sick all the time. And just, I know when you and I talked the other day, you had mentioned that, you know, a lot of it was either attributed to, you know, your heart condition, or it was just attributed to, you know, just being sick as a kid. That, how did that really shape the rest of your life as far as, you know, when you were finally diagnosed?
I never, growing up, really noticed it, even though looking back now in pictures and stuff, very easy to see. And that I was the smallest one out of my classmates and friends, and that I couldn't keep up as well as I should have been able to. And it's just a lot of things. It's the hindsight 2020 effect, to look back and see different things that should have been noticed and weren't. And it's crazy to see how it all went. But because of not being able to keep up as well as other kids and stuff like that, I became very interested in technology. I was 3 years old and able to set up my own NES system in any room of the house. And I used to move it all the time. And I learned how to turn on the stereo when I was 2 years old. And I learned a lot about technology, and I became very interested in that because I wasn't able to be the kid that played outside nonstop.
Right. Right. And that was, you know, I know you're in your 30s, so that puts it right about that time frame. You know, late 80s, when you're a kid, where, you know, you didn't have so much the video games and internet and all that stuff. And, you know, us being children of the 80s ourselves, you went out and you played with your friends and you ran around and, you know, all manner of chaos and everything. And, you know, for you to not be able to do that, you know, had to have been limiting.
Difficult.
Yeah, when you look back on what you went through, you know, are you angry about it at all, or, you know, have you made peace with it?
That's kind of a difficult question. I'm not mad about my younger years. Not
okay.
At all. I'm mad about the years right after I got diagnosed. Because it's just, I lost time being mad, and there was no rhyme or reason really for that. I mean, it's a reaction that I guess is expected, but at the same time, when I look back at all of it, I'm gained a lot of extra time that I know even doctors, when they met me right after I was diagnosed, couldn't definitively tell me, yeah, you'll be around 15, 16 years later. So the long time is what aggravates me more than any other.
Yeah, I can imagine.
That's reasonable, yeah, absolutely.
So what are some of the stereotypes about HIV that are contributing to the stigma?
The biggest one that I always hear is that if somebody hears that you've got it, they automatically assume you're gay. And that is not the case at all. I mean, and regardless of how you came in contact with the infection itself does not discriminate. It
right.
covers
right.
every race, religion, age in the world. So it's the fact that the ideas from the 80s are still very, very prevalent today in society.
Right.
And that whole thing about if you touch someone that's got HIV and things like that, that's even still hanging around. Do you still hear that?
Oh, yeah. A few years ago, I was out with a couple friends, and one of the girls I was hanging out with, me and her were really close, and I didn't actually hear it, but she heard people behind us talking about, oh, my God, I can't believe she's sitting next to him, and blah, blah, blah. Well, she handed me her drink. And she said, drink out of it. Just drink out of it. Just don't ask any questions. Drink out of it. And I did. And the lady behind us, I got even more vocal. And it ended up and at the other table getting up and leaving. And a big discussion started at our table of, can you believe that people are still like that? That they're still that level of ignorance.
Wow.
Especially now, you walk around with a computer with us 24/7. It doesn't take 5 minutes to look up an article that will dispel all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, people, I think we're, especially within the last year, we're seeing how closed-minded and ignorant people are and really can be about things, you know, and it's disappointing and it's heartbreaking, you know, because you look at a situation like yours and knowing, you know, the type of strides that have been made medically with HIV and AIDS, you know, the medications that are out there, and I mean, you're living proof that people can survive it and thrive it, and it's not a death sentence. And you know, I mean, that's, you know, you've had it since you're 3 months old, you know, and here you are in your 30s, and you know, you're out there kicking ass and taking names, you know.
You know,
it's
obviously my story is a bit different, but you know, with the bipolar disorder and the whole, you know, I can't even think of a word to call the whole group of, you know, disorders that I am coping with, but it's been around long enough that people should understand better now than they do. You know, all bipolar people are not serial killers. We're not all, you know, deranged. You know, just because we have it doesn't mean we're going to flip out and kill everybody in the room. It's, you know, it's ridiculous. And I can sympathize with you as far as the stigma, because you know, mental illness in general, there's a gigantic stigma surrounding it, and I really can sympathize with you on that.
Yeah. what do you think could be done to prevent, you know, situations like this happening in the future? You know, getting the awareness out there and everything. Where do you think we could go to help open people's eyes on this?
I think there should be commercials. As many commercials as you see every day about heartburn and about arthritis and all these other things. Why is there not a commercial about HIV and AIDS? I mean, there's brand new medications out that are once a day that nobody knows about.
Wow. That's...
I remember back in the day when it was like a, you know, like a basket of pill bottles that you would have to take every single day.
Yeah, I remember
When I started, I had the old man 7 days a week, 5 times a day pill box that I used to have to carry around. And I resented that thing.
I can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and just having to deal with all of that is just, you know, especially when you're a kid, knowing that, oh, I got to take my pills again. Here comes 83 of them. You know, that's got to mess with you a little bit.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. You've kind of pretty much turned into autopilot.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I wouldn't even have to wear a watch, and I could go, it's almost 3 o'clock.
You just
knew.
Because
of the way I would start feeling.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they could come up with one pill for bipolar disorder. I'm on 9.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's not a lot of fun, but...
Yeah. How are you feeling now? How's your health now? Do you have any medical or, you know, other types of disorders that you have to really stay on top of?
And the only other thing I have to stay on top of is pacemakers. They implanted one when I had the original surgery, and I'm on my 4th one now.
Wow.
And so you have to go and get the batteries checked. That's what made me, I always turned it into a joke. Whenever somebody would call me a DJ, I would remind them they're hiring the only battery operated DJ in the area.
It's good that you can have a positive attitude about the whole thing and get a laugh out of it. That's great.
Yeah, that's funny. My dad had obviously different situation, but he had to wear a pacemaker for a good chunk of my life. You know, he had heart problems and whatnot, and it's weird because, you know, the one that he had lasted him a ridiculously long time. He had to have had that one in his body for a good 15-20 years before they had to actually change it out. It worked well beyond its original lifespan. And I remember him being freaked out about having to go and get it changed out. And, you know, trying to reassure him, Dad, it'll be okay. You know, my dad was very much, he hated going to the doctor for any reason. So,
now because of my...
You hate flying, you said?
Yeah, my original pacemaker was in my stomach, and the latest one they put in my shoulder.
Hmm.
So if I go through a body scanner, it looks like a little battery pack with a lot of wires just going all over the place. And the first one pulled to the side to, hey, let's talk.
Every time. Gotta love Homeland Security for that.
All right. Well, with that, we're about due for our first break. So here is Casey Lansdale, Living in the Moment.
Easy to get off track, easy to lose your way. In a world that makes you believe there's no time to wait, that you gotta have it all, better have it all, better not slow down. Looking ahead got me looking in circles. Life with a plan at first seems hopeful. Worry that I won't make it like I want if time keeps flying by. But you gotta have faith. Don't let it slip away. Don't let me.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. We are very honored to be talking with Derek Canis today. He is an activist for HIV and AIDS and just an expert on the issue. So we are getting some good information from him today.
Yep, absolutely. Welcome back.
So it's your turn, honey.
It's my turn? Okay. Yep. So, Derek, you also have an End the Stigma campaign for HIV and AIDS. How can people take part in that campaign?
Contact me either on Twitter or Facebook, and we've got wristbands and shirts and all kind of stuff that I love adding people to the team around the country. And basically, the only thing I ask is if you hear somebody saying bad information about HIV, excuse me, about HIV or AIDS, just do your best to try to correct them. And it just starts with, if you can change one mind, you don't know how far exponentially out that reach could go.
That's very true. That's very true.
What are your social media your screen names and handles and whatnot so that people can get a hold of you?
On Twitter, it's DJDREK84. On Facebook, it's Derek Canis, AIDS Activist in the Stigma Campaign.
Okay. Do you have a website as well for it?
I do not currently have a website. That is being worked on right now.
Oh,
very
okay.
Cool.
That's good.
As soon as you get all the information for the website, please absolutely reach out to us. Let us know, and we will blast it all over the place so we can get people involved in talking about this topic. And something I wanted to talk with you about a little bit, I'm going to go a little off script on this, babe, is because I didn't get to bring this up the other day when we talked, and I don't know if you ever – heard of the person I'm about to bring up, but are you familiar with a guy named Peter McWilliams?
No.
Okay.
No.
Peter was he was a self-help author and writer, and he actually passed away in the late 90s, but he was
your cousin.
Yes, he was my cousin. And he was also an AIDS activist and HIV activist. He had it himself. he was instrumental in getting the medical marijuana movement going in California back in the late 90s, because he was having problems back then. He'd take his medications and he would get so sick that he'd end up throwing them all up. And the only thing that helped for that nausea and everything for him was smoking marijuana. And he had figured this out and got this movement going. And, you know, there's people to this day that, you know, kind of, you know, there's groups dedicated to him on Facebook and whatnot.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's a lot of Peter McWilliams, you know, fan groups.
Mm-hmm.
On Facebook, if you look them up, you can find a whole bunch of them. And I know I went into one and I said, you know, my husband was his cousin, and they were all, oh my God, you know, like I was a celebrity or something.
Yeah. Kind of crazy.
Really, really big fans of his. So,
yeah. He started bringing awareness to it, you know, back 20 some odd years ago. And, you know, I was curious if you were familiar with him at all or had heard of him or
he's got
anything.
A lot of books.
Yeah.
He wrote a lot of books in his lifetime.
Yeah. He was a very, very positive guy, you know, not unlike yourself, you know, and that's kind of what really struck me when I talked with you the other day is, you know, how positive you are in, you know, in all this with your struggles and with getting the word out and everything. And so I wanted to say thank you for what you do for trying to bring awareness to the HIV and AIDS subject, you know, because it needs to be talked about. You know, it really does.
Yeah, it's definitely a conversation that's not taking place enough.
No, it isn't. You know, it's, I think people kind of look at it as, well, you know, it seems like they've got a handle on it. Let's move on to this next thing, you know,
yeah.
And it's like, well, no, but that's not the case. Yeah. We should talk about everything that's out there. We should talk about cancer, and we should talk about mental illness, and we should talk about diabetes, and we should talk about, you know, all the other illnesses out there. And we still need to talk about HIV, and we need to talk about AIDS, you know, and, you know, really important thing that you mentioned the other day too, when we talked, was how people shouldn't be afraid to get tested. That's a really important thing. You know, you can't be afraid of it. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to people that love you. You owe it to your significant other. You owe it to everybody out there to take care of yourself and take care of the steps. And, you know, I was fascinated when you told me about when you got tested, you know, that it had just not been thought of to that point to test you for it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just some. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That was a very weird, weird time. Because I just, when I was 15, I had the third pacemaker implanted.
Hmm.
And I had a very rough time coming out of anesthesia and just getting better. And I eventually had to have a teacher coming to my house because I couldn't even make it to school. And so I got an appointment with a pulmonologist. And at this point in my life, I was 15, 4 foot tall, and about 55 pounds. And so I walk into the doctor's office, and he comes around, introduces himself real quick, and he immediately says, "What's wrong with you?"
Mm-hmm.
And my first thought was, "Nice to meet you too, Doc. How's your day going?" And then he politely explained to me, it's not every day a 15-year-old my height and weight walks into his office.
Mm-hmm.
So he ran me through every kind of test he could think of, and he ended up sending me down to Gainesville, Florida, which I was definitely not happy about, because the last thing you want to do is send my Georgia Bulldog butt down to the home of the Florida Bears and go over to them. So they sent me to endocrinology, and they put me on growth hormone, the stuff that all the baseball players and I think a couple other athletes got busted for using.
Right.
Is now what I was.
Mm.
And that was great. For about a year, a little over a year, I took that, and it did very well. I grew a foot in height. I gained about 55 more pounds. And I was being followed by a class at the college because my doctor was the head of immunology. So what they do is they take your medical records, black out your name, and, you know, you're just a patient random number that they look at and, you know, how would you diagnose this? What would you do from here?
Right.
And they went through a full medical chart review on me, and one girl in class realized I had never had an HIV test. And they came in and asked me to do it. And 2 weeks later, I went back and got the news.
Wow.
Wow.
So it wasn't even a doctor. It was a student that figured out that you had never been tested.
It was complete luck.
Wow. That blows my mind.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I mean, good on her for catching it. But that's got to kind of, you know, you take a step back on that one. It's like, well, wait a minute, you know.
Where was everybody else?
Yeah, jeez. Thank God she caught it.
Yeah, really.
So
do you have any advice for someone that is afraid to get tested or has recently been diagnosed?
And fear is completely understandable. I get that. But there's nothing good about not knowing in this situation. The more you know about your health, the more you can
protect not only yourself, but those around you. And that's extremely important. This is not a disease that should be feared like it was in the 80s. Now, there's enough information. We all know how it's spread. We all know how it's contracted. And you can take steps that can save not only your life, but the lives of everyone you care about. So why would you not want to do that?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, that's my thought on the thing is, you know, you're making sure you're okay. You're reassuring, you know, everybody else in your life too. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, there's no shame in it, you know, and that's the, I think the thing that people need to get past, you know, it's, you go and you get your test done and okay, you know, and then, you know, are you afraid of what the result might be? I mean, if you're, you know, yeah, I mean, but it's no different than being afraid of, you know, getting tested for cancer or anything else, you know, and then, you know, God forbid if you have it, then, you know, you take the next steps, you know, but, you know, it's like we said earlier, you know, you can live and thrive with this and have a full life. You know, it's not.
And it's not like it was back in the 60s, 70s.
80s.
Well, it was around in the 60s and the 70s. Remember we watched that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we watched a movie. It was called A Paper Heart. Wasn't that what it was?
Was it that or was it Normal Heart? I don't remember now what the title of the movie was. I remember which one you're talking about, but
look it up on your phone.
It's a really good one to watch, and it's probably close to 30 years old now, but it's called "And the Band Played On."
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's about that CDC team that discovered the virus, and it gives you a very good timeline up to, I think, 93 or 94.
Yeah.
That's what I
watch. Oh, Joe was right. It's called the Normal Heart, and it had Mark Ruffalo in it, right?
Right.
Mark Ruffalo is fantastic, and he takes on every role that, and he becomes that role. He's so fantastic. If you can watch the Normal Heart, we ended up buying it on Amazon, and it was exceptional. It was a very, very good film.
Yeah,
I think you would like it.
Yep. I'll check that out.
I want to change things up a little bit, Derek, because there's another part to your life besides, you know, being an HIV and AIDS activist, and that is that you are a DJ. So I would like to know, being a musician myself, how did you become a DJ, and what type of events do you take part in?
This is actually going to be one of the dumbest, probably funniest stories you'll ever hear.
I'm good with dumb and fun.
It all started when I was too young to actually be going out. A friend of mine who knew the owners of the little bar we would go to got me in. And they had karaoke. And for months, I didn't do anything with it. I just sat back and just hung out. I had a good time. Well, one night, I finally got the courage up to sing karaoke. And I sang a song that everybody knows, even if they don't like to admit to it. And that song is Ice Ice Baby.
Oh, jeez.
Well, most people in this bar would stand in one spot right in front where the microphone was and just sing their song, and that was the end of it. Mm-hmm. Well, the club had recently got wireless microphones. So when I got up to sing, I ran all through this little club and sat down with people and had them singing, and everybody was standing up. And this was right when camera phones first came out. So people were snapping pictures and taking little videos and whatever. And I didn't think anything of it. And then the next week rolled around going to the place, and I get a phone call. And it's the owner of the club saying, "Where are you at? Everybody's looking for you." I said, "I'm at home. I didn't realize that was that big of a deal." And he said, "Just come out. I'll buy your dinner, whatever you need. Just, you are the biggest entertainment draw on karaoke night now." And so from that, I ended up hanging out with his DJs. And this was right when CDs were going out and everything was going to the hard drives. And I was into technology. I knew all about that. So they kept showing me more and more, saying, "You know more about what the company's about to buy than we do." So I ended up training guys that had been DJing for 15, 20 years how to now use high-tech DJ equipment. Oh, and that's how my career started.
That's awesome. You know, and that's really cool that you had made that much of an impression, especially on the owners of the club, that they're like, "Hey, come out, we'll feed you, you know, just we'll do whatever you need, just get here, people want to see you." I mean, that's got to be a good feeling.
And I ended up, my first job was at a club that wasn't his club, and he was after me every weekend going, "Come on, you know you want to come here. You know you want to come here." And eventually I did. I worked for him for about 3 years.
Oh, that's great. That's very cool. Have you done anything to combine what you do with the DJing with any of your activism? I mean, have there been any, like, events, you know, awareness events or anything where you've actually gone out and DJed at them?
No, not yet. I haven't had the opportunity. I mean, there's a couple bigger organizations in bigger cities near me that have kind of shown interest in me doing something, but as of today, no, I haven't. I've had the opportunity to work for the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, and Wounded Warriors. Those are the big organizations I've been able to help.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's great. Especially Wounded Warriors. That's, you know,
I can't watch their commercials without
crying,
bawling my eyes out. So it's awesome that you're helping them.
Of course, then again, that we were making a list that time of everything that made her cry, and there were some ridiculous things on there too. So
I cry at dog shows. So I do, honest to God. Like, if a dog wins, I'm bawling. I'm so happy for that damn dog.
It's
I have to send you the picture of my dog eating waves.
Yeah,
he'll get up on his back leg, wave at you.
That's awesome.
It's all just a low gimmick to get a treat.
Oh, that's great.
So, do you have any projects that you're working on for the future?
I am currently working with a ghostwriter on a book.
Okay, that sounds good.
How's that coming?
It's coming along very well. It's something I wish I would have done probably a few years ago. But
Well, you know,
trying
better late than
now.
Never. Yeah, you know, better late than never on that one. You know, let us know when it's done and ready to come out. You know, we'd love to have you, you know, back on to help promote it by all means.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that's the thing with us.
All kind of crazy, funny stories and stuff. Because you land in so many awkward situations in hospitals. And that's what a lot of this book's about.
But, you know, that's good. I mean, one thing that we saw when Beck put her book out was how many people responded saying, oh my God, I thought I was alone. You know, it's great to see that, you know, you went through this too. And that, you know, this is not strange and blah, blah, blah. And having a book like yours that you're working on come out, you know, can show people, hey, you know, this is a crazy thing that happened to me when I was in the hospital, for example. And, you know, if this has happened to you, you know, you're not alone. You know, there's a camaraderie to community, you know.
Yeah.
When you get a few people that have had similar life experiences together that have previously felt isolated and alone, suddenly they're not so alone and they have a voice and they can speak out and raise awareness, you know, and that's a huge thing, you know.
Definitely.
That's one thing I've seen,
that's
especially
what we're
with
all
Twitter.
Here for.
Yeah. Yeah, to raise each other up for sure. You know, December 1st is World AIDS Day. Do you have any plans? I know this is just August, but you know, December is a while from now.
I'm
do you have any plans on anything for that yet?
I'm looking at a couple events out in Hollywood, California, to possibly go to. They do a lot of big events and stuff out there. They're in New York. I'm looking all over right now, kind of in the planning stage of that.
Oh, that's great. You know, that, and, you know, it's probably a good time to start working on that now and get a good game plan, you know, and that way you've got your ducks in a row, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. You know, Hollywood, have you been to Hollywood yet?
I went a couple years ago to an event for a tree lighting at Hollywood and Highland that was dedicated to HIV and AIDS patients.
Okay.
And that
very
was
cool.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, I love Hollywood. It's been probably 17, 18 years since I've been out there, but I love it. You know, I love visiting that area and seeing everything, you know. Of course, I always do all the touristy stuff, so that's me.
Yeah, I've actually never been, so I'd like to go sometime myself.
Yeah, my cousin Peter that I was telling you about actually lived out there. Lived in Laurel Canyon, and it was beautiful, the house that he had. It actually overlooked L.A., and it was just the coolest view. It was really, really cool.
Oh,
I
wow.
I gotta admit, I miss the guy. He was an incredible influence in my life. You know, a lot of the stuff that he talked about, to this day, I take to heart. You know, because he was a social justice warrior, man. He just covered everything.
So we've got a question that came in, and the person that asked it is wondering if you know about PrEP, P-R-E-P. It's a new drug that makes transmitting AIDS close to 0%.
Yes, and I am currently taking that.
Oh,
wow.
Great.
That's awesome. How's it working out for you? I mean, is it...
doing really good. I got switched over to it and just kind of got burnt out on a regimen of multiple times a day. And it's a once a day and pill, and it takes a lot of the stress and worry out. Did I take my meds today? Because it's real easy to know. Yeah, I stopped and took that one pill.
Yeah, definitely.
That's got to make it a little bit easier. You know, I know I have a hard time trying to keep track of the pills that I take. I only take a couple a day. You know, I'm diabetic, so, you know, luckily I'm not on insulin or anything. It's just, you know, metformin. But, you know, it's one of those things where I know if I haven't taken it, I know right away that I haven't taken it, and I feel terrible. So that's cool that, you know, one pill a day, you're covered.
Yeah. And that's the one why I don't understand why there's not a commercial for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Crazy to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no reason why they shouldn't be, if they came, it should be out there. If they came to, you know, create something that is that impactful on the condition, there's no reason why they shouldn't be advertising it, you know, every 20 minutes.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. Pat, we actually had another question come in for you. This person wants to know how you go about telling your partners that you have AIDS, and do you have a sense of how soon you should bring it up?
There is no right or wrong time of when to bring it up. Just make sure you're using protection before you bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
But just if, when you tell someone, be direct and be honest and don't try to dance around it. I mean, they're going to have questions and you're going to have to answer them. So you
right.
might as well be as direct and as honest as you can be. And that's the best way to deal with it, as uncomfortable as it is. There is only that way to deal with it. And that doesn't just go with HIV and AIDS. That's with many other medical diseases. So just be
right.
honest. Be true. Don't start and stop and then put their mind in a place where they don't trust you, and just get it out.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's really good advice. You know, and I think that's one thing, especially for the younger kids out there too, is that, you know, develop a sense of accountability, you know, in your actions. You know, that's not just with, you know, if you're, you know, carrying some kind of you know, illness or whatever. That's anything in life is having accountability. But especially with that, you know, don't be afraid to say, well, you know, I need to let you know I have this going on. You should be aware of it. Do you have any questions for me? You know, because quite honestly, if that person is going to have some kind of hang up and be a jerk about things, you know,
you
really don't want them in your life anyway, then, you know, and you're dodging a bullet, really.
Yeah.
So,
since you're a DJ, we'll ask you this question. We used to ask everybody these questions at the end of our show, but we got to a point where the questions were going so long and the conversations were going so long, we didn't get to these questions anymore. But since you're a DJ and you know a lot about music, I'm sure, can you possibly list off three bands or songs that you use when you're maybe down or you need a pick-me-up?
When I'm down and need a pick me up. Let me think. Garth Brooks, The Dance, was always a good one to me.
That was a good song.
I'm trying to think of the name of the band. Godsmack, I Stand Alone was a good one.
Yeah, that's a great
just
song.
Just because, you know, inside I Stand Alone, when you really had those low, low moments, that was something I would listen to. And then my other favorite song is Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone.
Oh, that's another really good song.
That's a really good song. Yeah. Those are all great, you know, for definitely for different states of mind. And it's funny that you mentioned I Stand Alone, because that's, you know, for me, it's kind of, you know, screw you, I got this. You know, you're not going to tear me down kind of thing. I don't know. Does it give you that kind of feeling as well? That feeling of invincibility?
Yeah. And the funny thing is, my doctors, when I started treatment, started calling me the Terminator because I was the patient they had that would walk in and say, I think I've got a sinus infection. And they would go through the test and go, no, you have pneumonia.
Oh,
and I'm still sick. Well, give me a Z-Pack and I'll call you Monday. Like, I'm not feeling bad. I don't feel pain the way a lot of people recognize pain. And it's because of the heart surgery so young that my body got used to a very high level of pain. So I have I'm a very kind of odd patient for a doctor in that sense.
Very resilient.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'll put up with it for weeks until it just drives me crazy. And then they're going, do you realize how deadly this could have been? And I'm just sitting there smiling going, well, I made it to the office, so it's your turn to fix it, Doc.
I'm
the one that works that, and they gotta fix it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, we have come to the end of our time with you for today, Derek, and we're sad about that because we've enjoyed talking to you and we've learned a lot, and you know, we just really wish you the best for all your future endeavors. And when your book comes out, make sure you let me know because I can help you promote it a little bit with, you know, I have multiple accounts in multiple places that I keep track of. And I do a little bit of promotion on the side. So just let me know and I'll help you out with that. But
you know, again, thanks for, you know, helping to raise awareness on this issue that, you know, really it needs the spotlight, you know, it's very, very important.
And we say thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right. Hang on the line for just a minute. And here is Long Grief Battle Plan.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.